As you can see from this first slide, I'm just a warm-up act for this process. Jack Davies is coming after me, and she's got the real meat of the presentation. I'm just going to introduce the basic circumstance. It's sort of like, and this I'll see how many people recognize this. This whole, although I think we have a relatively young audience, people might not understand what I'm saying. It's sort of like I'm Foghat, and Jack is Led Zeppelin. looking at a 1970s heavy metal scenario. But basically, what our talk is about is public health and health information exchanges and how we can develop a common roadmap for future success. Health information exchange and that arena, our major activity at this time at CDC, is a 5-year, $38 million effort in three areas, Washington, Idaho, Indiana, and New York. This activity was initiated in February of 08, and the three coordinators that we have in the Washington-Idaho region is SAIC, in Indiana, the Regenstrief Institute, and in New York, it got cut off the slide, but basically what New York is headed by Health Research Incorporated, which is a body that supports the New York State Health Department. And they work collaboratively with the New York State Health Department and the New York City Department of Mental Health and Hygiene. These three organizations have tremendous attributes for team success. All three of these sites work together as a team to get things done commonly. Our Washington-Idaho team has a great deal of health information exchange. Jack is one of the leaders of Inland Northwest Health Services, a very robust health information exchange with a superb business plan. And they also have a great deal of technical expertise available, having SAIC as one of their key partners. And they also have a great deal of government experience in interacting with the CDC and also with the Nationwide Health Information Network process headed by the Office of the National Coordinator. In Indiana, we have the Regenstrief Institute, which has more than 30 years of health information exchange experience, is on the cutting edge of many of the technology activities. And not only that, but also in terms of developing partnerships with the community that work well for everyone. New York has a significant amount of state funding for statewide health information exchange. They also have state and local health departments that have very superb capabilities and are leaders in the arenas of public health informatics, information technology, and epidemiology. And just in case, I did not mention that in a later slide, let me mention it here. Washington-Idaho basically represents a bi-state process whereby we're going to examine how a health information exchange can support the activities of health state health departments in two different locations. Indiana is a metropolitan area experiment, if you will. And New York represents a total statewide effort that is going to incorporate regional health information organizations that operate contiguously throughout the entire state in getting that information into public health. Key deliverables for this 5-year process involve the minimum biosurveillance data set. Anna introduced you to that concept. And basically what they are going to do is expand their geographic coverage, increase the number of data elements in the AHIC minimum biosurveillance data set that they're able to collect. They're also going to assess the utility and feasibility of this process. As Anna mentioned in her talk, AHIC has now transformed into something else. And one of the things we intend to do is provide input to that new organization about, as I mentioned, utility and feasibility of the data elements that they recommended. And of course, as I've learned over the past 18 months, they will certainly express their opinion about how things should possibly be changed. And I won't dwell on this, but basically this is an overview of the minimum biosurveillance data set elements, and you can see the broad categories, base facility elements, daily facility summary reports, and then there are patient and clinical data elements, as well as a series of things related to infectious diseases, both laboratory and clinical. is in New York, just to give you an example, it's a progressive process of looking at these RIOs that cover a series of counties and beginning with those and then progressing over a period of time. In year two, they've now added two or three additional areas of RIOs where they're beginning to collect information. Recall, as I mentioned earlier, that's a statewide process. Another key aspect of this, which probably relates very closely to what Anna was talking about, is the importance of bidirectional communication. Here is our basic model for that process, beginning at the right with the medical community, where we set up a process of receiving information from hospitals, labs, clinics, and others, and we have that information relayed into a health information exchange, or RIO. The health information exchange then has the primary business model of managing that data to support the needs of the medical community. And what we are attempting to establish as one of our primary goals is examining how that information, that very those very robust databases, can subsequently be utilized to transmit information to state and local health departments. And then, of course, we like the idea that the state health department would then subsequently send some data to the Centers for Disease Control. And some of you may have heard that what we're looking at this point is a specific format called GIPSE, which stands for Geocoded Interoperable Population Summary Exchange, De-Identified Aggregated Data. And I should point out that starting yesterday, all three of our sites have started sending H1N1 data through this format that I've just very briefly described to the CDC, real-time information that is now supporting the H1N1 surveillance process. The CDC can then look at all of that information on it from a national perspective, determine where there may be some hot spots or areas of difficulty, and relay that back to the appropriate state health departments, and also, if necessary, request additional information from the state health department if it's felt to be necessary for epidemiologic investigation. The state health department then has the capacity to do additional alerting to let people know in their communities what's going on, and they can do that through the health information exchange. In addition, if they need additional data to conduct their epidemiologic investigations, they have a very nice store of clinical information available to them in the health information exchange that can be utilized to support public health processes. And then finally, the HIE can serve a function of getting critical public health information directly to the medical community, through whom, and one prime example of that is the Regenstrief Institute and their Docs for Docs program. They have the ability to immediately reach healthcare providers in their communities in a way that public health might not have at this point. And in addition, what we also are working on with the health information exchanges are a series of activities to help us enhance routine case reporting for public health purposes. There are decision support activities that are being considered that you may have seen in the interoperability showcase. They're also developing automated case detection and reporting capabilities. And one thing that you have seen in demonstrations and in presentations is natural language processing. Our HIEs are also focusing in that arena. So you see there's a wide variety of activities here that focus at the HIE level on the ability to enhance the kinds of critical information that public health needs to do its day-to-day mission. Other things, very quickly, besides the minimum biosurveillance data set and bidirectional communication, are the translation process. We have recently been asked to examine the process, and this is basically what translation translates into, is the ability to take what we've learned at these three sites and help other sites across the nation that are attempting to establish these relationships between health information exchanges and public health. How can we take our lessons learned and help others get this accomplished? We have a case reporting project. You may have heard Jerry Johnson speak earlier in the session, where we're working specifically with the CDC NEDS program to demonstrate how the HIEs can support enhanced case reporting. And we are also looking at a variety of unique AVR capabilities, some of which you may have seen demonstrated in the interoperability showcase. We also have an upcoming NIN interaction in the fall of 09. And basically what this involves is a process of establishing nationwide health information network connect gateways at all three of our state sites, such that at this point in time, they're currently transmitting their H1N1 data to CDC utilizing FinMS. But hopefully within a couple of months, we will be connected to the network that you saw Anna describe, the Nationwide Health Information Network, via NIN Connect, and that information will then begin to flow from the states to the CDC via that process. CDC will then officially be in the business of moving towards full interoperability within the Nationwide Health Information Network and have the capability potentially to begin communications with a number of other entities that are within that network. And I now introduce to you the main act, Jack Davies.
Thanks, Shirley. I was trying to think of an analogy where the front act sort of outstaged the main act, but I couldn't come up with an appropriate rock band analogy, so I'll just skip that part. I'm going to be talking a little bit about the accomplishments and direction of all three of the project sites and organizing them in the context of the five goals that have been established for the CDC and really reflect upon the entire public health system. I invite my colleagues in the audience from all three of the sites to weigh in as I go through this information. So that we capture and convey to you everything that is both has been done and that we intend to accomplish with this program. I sort of wear two hats. I'm within the Northwest Health Services, which is, as Charlie described, is a health information exchange and more organization that covers Eastern Washington and Northern Idaho. But I also have a background in public health and was with the Washington State Department of Health for many years. So I'm here to talk about from both perspectives and recognizing that each of the elements I'm going to be covering here is absolutely critical across the public health system. One of the things that we all want to be doing and are demonstrating that we're beginning to do with this program is strengthening surveillance and epidemiology. Absolutely crucial, the basic foundation of public health, being able to determine what kind of data, electronic data, will actually support public health practice, what works, what doesn't. We talked about the biosurveillance minimum data set, and we're bringing in data for public health to look at for the epidemiologists to use that they've never had access to before. What is that going to mean? How is that going to translate into effective public health practice? How do you access this data from these clinical systems? What role do health information exchanges, which are increasingly important in the healthcare environment, what role is that going to play in our ability to access data from different sources? And how can we be more timely in responding to public health events like H1N1 that Charlie mentioned? We've been doing a lot of shifting of effort over the last couple of months just to be able to pull information in on H1N1. Making sure that this is timely and that we're not just looking at anonymized syndromic surveillance, but that we're also leveraging the same systems to support case reporting and outbreak detection. Again, the fundamental activities and processes in public health. And then the whole concept is situational awareness, so that public health officials at all levels, local, state, and the federal level, have an understanding of what's going on amongst the population across the country. And that we're putting together tools that can really improve our capability. It's not enough to just turn this fire hose of data onto public health agencies. How do they process that, particularly given that they don't have enough people and the expertise is often not there? So the tools are a big piece of this. All three of our projects involve personnel, very strong backgrounds in epidemiology and surveillance, and all three involve local, state, and state officials, as well as representatives from the CDC. It's been very important to all of us to make sure that we've got those connections so that these systems are serving the needs across the health system. The New York team really has pulled together a lot of people. As Charlie mentioned, it's a statewide effort. It's a real strong collaboration, particularly between the New York City Department of Health and also the New York State Department of Health. And they've involved as well the state county health official organization. Washington has, we have active involvement from the State Department of Health, as well as particularly the Spokane Regional Health District, which is the community where INHS is housed. And we have currently implemented 10 hospitals that are doing the complete biosurveillance minimum data set real time across emergency room, inpatient, and outpatient facilities associated with those hospitals. And it's focused really on the a lot of things, but again, recently we've been looking at influenza-like illness, pulling all that together, putting it in aggregated form, as Charlie mentioned, the GIPSI format, and is in addition to the state activity, sending up to the CDC. Indiana has done a lot with, as Washington, leveraging existing data flows. We're not trying to create new activities here, but what's already flowing across the clinical healthcare system and tapping into that rather than creating something from scratch. Indiana has found that they've not only been able to do that very successfully for the syndromic surveillance type of activities, but it's enhanced their ability to do case reporting. They have detected last year more than 120,000 transactions that have a public health notifiable condition, simply by looking at this existing data flow. And they are automating their data flow so that they can really understand the relationship between chief complaints, what's going on with diagnoses, test orders, and again, what does that information mean for actually detecting different kinds of disease, such as influenza. Any other comments or additions from the sites to add to this topic on surveillance and epidemiology? I'm going to keep giving you opportunities, so don't sit back there and just be totally quiet on me. As I mentioned, being involved with and supporting state and local health departments is critical. That this is where the action is. This is where there has to be the capability to understand what's going on in the community and to respond. And we're acutely aware of that across all three projects. As I mentioned, we've got involvement from all three levels of public health, and we're really working to improve their access to a variety of data sources. It's got to be more complete and more timely, and then it's got to include the analytical tools so that they know how to use the data and that they're able to rapidly react to it. We've done a number of demonstrations. We've had a lot of focus right now on hospital inpatient systems, but we're also beginning to look at the ambulatory care environment and have done some alerting scenarios. Charlie emphasized quite a bit the bidirectional communication. There's tremendous possibility around this bidirectional process for all kinds of ways to improve the interaction between public health and the healthcare environment. This EMR alerting scenario is something that we've started to look at and trying to push information back out from public health to the healthcare providers so that they have guidance on what's going on in their community, what laboratory tests they may need to think about ordering, and so forth. And so we've just started on some demonstrating that, and now we're trying to get a full-fledged pilot going. Again, New York is spending quite a lot of time. I mentioned their involvement of their local health officials, and they've got a huge project underway. Charlie showed the maps and showing how they've got multiple health information exchange organizations involved in that and are slowly ramping it up to cover the entire state. In Washington, we have got the state and local involved. We also are very grateful to SAIC, which has been be a help not only to the Northwest Public Health Information Exchange Project, but across all three projects to help pull it, activities together and organize everything. And in Indiana, again, lots of local as well as state involvement. And they are, as a real focus on the alerting capabilities as well. That's a, been a fundamental piece of the ReconStreef activities for many, many years, being able to push information out to physicians. They have more than 10,000 physician workflows where they have the capability of integrating messaging out. And so this is the potential for public health is enormous, and it's something that we're really starting to realize in this project. Indiana has used that, for example, to be able to check for infants that have missed their newborn screening tests. So that's just an example of the kinds of things that you can do with this kind of data set. Comments from the other sites?
Yes, it's your comments. I'm from the New York City Department of Health, so I've been working with the group. We've been implementing a system within clinical works through a bunch of different sites, so we've got 1,500 providers. I guess to comment just on some of the things you brought up. So yes, we're heavily involved, particularly right now with the four RIOs in New York City to implement and get connectivity to share CCDs initially between all of our different RIOs within New York City itself. And then also we've recently also enhanced the system to be able to, we have a central hub architecture where we as the public health department will generate their criteria and say we want an alert on this particular conditions. Push out the criteria and an alert for a particular syndrome. We're using, of course, like H1N1 in the demo next week. And also being able to push out an order set that will contain, you know, what maybe labs you should order, medications you should follow up, as well as patient provider education materials. So.
Great, thank you. Anything else? One of the things that we're increasingly seeing is how this kind of project is positioning public health to serve a leadership role in health reform. This close interaction between the healthcare environment and the public health environment and bringing together and leveraging a lot of the activities that are underway in healthcare is really positioning public health in more of a leadership position. And for a variety of things, including community prevention. This is not just focused on response to existing problems, but to be able to identify and prevent things before they happen. We have certainly done quite a lot as a group. There's a lot of participation on some of the standards committees that we heard about a little while ago. And Charlie mentioned the involvement with the Nationwide Health Information Network Connect. So there is a great deal of feedback from this program that is being channeled up to some of the national health reform efforts. And we anticipate that there's going to be a lot of artifacts that are going to be valuable well beyond this project that will help health departments understand how they can work not only with the healthcare system but with each other. I mean, there was a very good case made earlier about how difficult it is to share information just within a health department, let alone between public health and the healthcare system. This national leadership, certainly in Washington, we've done a lot with being involved with these national organizations. We've been working with HITSB, with IHE, and some of the other standards setting bodies. And we have been participating in these Connect demonstrations for last year and this year as well, and in the HIMSS interoperability demonstration. In Indiana, there's a lot of leveraging of existing infrastructure, and there's already been work partnering to identify monitoring MRSA, C. diff, and other kinds of nosocomial infections. A different kind of a problem beyond the environmental situational awareness, but again, an example of how you can use the same infrastructure to accomplish a number of things. In New York, they've been looking not only at leadership at the national level, but doing some interesting things at the state level with health reform. There are activities, the HEAL New York Project, Healthcare Efficiency and Affordability Law for New Yorkers, which is a project that, a new law that is intended to improve the overall healthcare quality, affordability, and outcomes for everybody in New York. Well, they're through this situational awareness project, they're able to feed data into that, or anticipate feeding data into the agencies that are responsible for implementing that law, so that they can have a sense of what the impact is going to be. So it's health reform at all levels is something that can benefit from the information we're learning from this program. Other comments from the group? Yes.
Well, I'd like to make a comment on a couple of points that I think were very poignant from your presentation, Dr. McCreevers, and also from Dr. Lova, and that's the principle of IT and implementing IT in a new initiative like as huge and as complex as this is, and that's building from the bottom up. And the general principle for success is the guidance from the top down and build it from the bottom up. And you made a very good point about the local health departments. I mean, that's where public disasters and public health that takes place locally. And getting the resources there, that's a huge problem. There's human resources to the money to do these things, the awareness, getting the awareness done. There are huge obstacles in getting this initiative, making this initiative successful. And hopefully with this ARRA funding that's coming out now, that the people who are providing that governance at the top will get that money down to the local levels.
Well, and we had a very good example in Washington of the importance of the local health departments because of the long-standing relationship between the local public health agency and the healthcare providers in the community. That's already in place. There's already communication that goes back and forth. There's already reporting of disease that goes from the local healthcare providers to the local health agency. And we found that when we approached hospitals asking them to participate in this project, they paid a lot more attention to us when we had a local local public health representative in the room, because that person already had the relationship. That person already knew who the infection control officials were in each of the hospitals, and they could speak the same language, and so it was very, very important to have local health on board to get the hospitals committed. Yeah, exactly. I mentioned a little bit about community prevention. This data flow is going to be very important to be able to look at things like immunization rates or charity care, indigent care. That's becoming a bigger issue all the time, unfortunately, in our economy. Chronic disease management, we're not just talking about infectious disease here, but the capability to tap into these health information exchanges and to tap into these very, very rich data sets opens up all kinds of possibilities for being able to look at asthma, at diabetes, at other chronic conditions affecting the population, as well as a different way to get into our registries. I mean, you showed a very nice slide about the sort of siloed effect we have even when we have common registries or common types of registries across the country. So conceivably, we could be using this kind of data flow to put common information into registries from a variety of different disease areas. We certainly are working to leverage the workflow, the data flow in Washington just for these kinds of things. Indiana is already looking at some very interesting projects, being able to actually track the health of certain at-risk populations, being able to identify those populations and identify particular risks associated with them. They've done a study, this is fascinating to me, looking at mapping and looking at the proximity of fast food restaurants to children who are at risk for obesity. And also looking at social networks to assess adolescents at risk for STDs and so on. So there's, if you start looking at, again, when you have a rich data set like this that's available that you can geocode, and then that you can compare to other sources of data, there's all sorts of intriguing possibilities that open up. Oh, sorry. Other comments from the group? Any other sites? The problem with being a person who talks with my hands, you know, the microphone is at risk. And then the last thing that has been identified and is actually was talked about quite a lot yesterday during the plenary session is global health. And the question was asked of the representative from the World Health Organization is, what do you see as sort of a benefit of the ARRA activities and the high-tech activities for outside the United States? And that individual mentioned just the downstream effect of being the many other countries hoping to learn from what's done here in the U.S., hopefully learning from the good things that are done and not the reverse, to be able to gain from the tools that are developed. And we see the same kind of a benefit happening through this program. We are developing and enhancing existing open source tools, and those should be available across the board within the country and across and to the global health community. We have been doing a lot with the, well, for this specific example, I can't take credit for it, it's in Indianapolis again, has already done a lot of open source work and has an actual open source EMR that they've made available to a number of sub-Saharan African countries to enable them to have capability that they couldn't have access to otherwise. So global health, but of course, it is a particular issue for both Washington and New York as major ports of entry, as we came to understand very quickly during the SARS outbreak, and then also as states sharing borders with Canada. So in both cases, Washington and New York have done quite a lot with cross-border initiatives already. We're looking at the data that's coming in through this source and being able to set up data sharing agreements with the provinces in Canada so that we can look at movement of populations and look at shared health issues across those borders. In Washington, we are up and coming up very close to the Winter 2010 Olympics, which are being held in Vancouver, British Columbia. And so that won't exacerbate our H1N1 issues, but we are working with the British Columbia government to set up some data sharing arrangements to make it possible to identify any problems that might be moving back and forth across the border. Other comments from the group? Yes.
I had a question about a comment you made earlier concerning your work in the Northwest. You said that there were 10 facilities that were providing data, a minimum data set. And I was wondering how, in those facilities, the minimum data sets actually compiled each day.
The way that INHS runs our health information exchange, and one of the services we provide to all of those facilities, is actually running their information systems. And we run their information systems in a centralized manner. So the product is Meditech. It's a common hospital information system. And so we have worked with each of those. We have worked with Meditech and with we have a very large IT staff ourselves that has established interfaces between our system and so I've got our technical person here, and he's glaring at me as I'm quickly losing track here, because I'm not an IT person. But have established the necessary interfaces and purchased the interfaces from Meditech to be able to extract the data out of the different modules, the ADT module and the lab module and so forth. And then that rolls up into an integrator, which has been provided by SAIC, where there is a pseudo-anonymization process that takes place, because this is anonymized data, but it is not completely anonymized. We have the capability, there's a linker that is attached to it. So we can, if public health believes that there's something that they really need to dig into, and Charlie mentioned the ability to request information back from these hospitals, so that we can ask the hospitals to actually check back in and give us the record for an individual. So Paul, do you want to address a little bit more the technical process?
I think you pretty much nailed it. We're just listening to the HL7 messages coming out of Meditech. So instead of, we have them routed within our interface engine to like a GE centricity system, we just added another route to the SAIC integrator. And the SAIC integrator listens and sorts and compiles.
Well, let me give a concrete example. For example, for a given facility, how do you determine the number of admissions in a given day?
We have we wrote a custom report for that, and so we just examined the number of, I believe, new patient inpatient registrations, and then we track the number of discharges, and then we just do so.
Well, I saw David put his hand up back there, so.
And compile through those to get the number. We also look at the census run at the end tonight to see, you know, how many admits have come through there and how many beds are occupied and stuff and so on. So that's where we get part of that.
Let me make one real quick comment. I just want to emphasize that at this juncture, the policy is such the federal government would not be requesting identifiable information from the HIV. Only the state health department or local health department would be involved in requesting additional information that would potentially be identifiable for their epidemiologic investigation. So, just want to make that clear.
There was a question back here, and then I'll come up here.
And that brings up my question, is when you do see a case, when there is a case identified that public health, when there's reviewing the data and analyzing the data, and you said that they can provide that identifier, and then get that to the hospital, I believe, and they'll help with the patient's record information. Have you looked at, investigated the data use agreements between the two entities that actually allow the public health person to perhaps have a client and look up that patient's record themselves without having to go through a hospital resource?
I can't speak for the other two sites. I do know that in our conversations, our discussions with the hospitals in Washington and Idaho, the capability to have that request for access to that information channeled through a hospital representative was very important to the hospitals. And our local health people were comfortable with that because that is a process that they already use now. And going back to the importance of those existing relationships, it builds on, and then the way we structure the process is building on the relationship that local public health currently has with, in most cases, it's the infection control officer for the hospital. It's the one who does the public health reporting.
They're available and they're responsive.
We did make part of the data use agreement that they would have somebody available 24/7. So that they need to designate, if the infection control officer is not available, who's their backup and what's the process for contacting that person. And so you had a question over here?
Yes, what you just described, this is exactly how BioSense collects information. The ACIC has collected information, has developed integrator for BioSense as well. So, and your presentation here is something where BioSense is implying it's going on. That's the sense I'm getting it for the future. So what's the relationship between BioSense process as it's getting its requirements from stakeholders for its next iteration and what's going on here, and is there any harmonization effort going on?
The data that comes in from this particular project, and it's now just beginning with the H1N1, there is a system in place where the information that's coming in or the data points that are coming in can be harmonized, to use your term, with the other data sets that are arriving. And basically the decisions about how that information is collated how analyses are going to be completed, it begins with the particular epidemiologists that have expertise in that specific arena. Although we're just now beginning to test that. So in that regard, it's not completely like BioSense. So since BioSense is looking at something strictly for the purpose of syndromic surveillance, we are looking at a broader perspective of gathering de-identified, aggregated information for a wide variety of different settings, beginning with H1N1.
I guess my question was, not the data harmonization, but are you working together with BioSense folks as they are planning what's next iteration of BioSense is going to be? Because yesterday when I was listening to their presentation, it seemed that they were kind of implying the model that you have already implemented where states collected data and they might repurpose the data beyond what biosurveillance was initially intended and then send up subset to CDC.
In this particular model, our policy or our strategy is strictly as you just described it. The data that will come to the federal government is all controlled by the state health departments. The state health departments develop the agreements with the health information exchanges to acquire the data that they desire for what they want to accomplish at the state and local level. And then there are agreements that exist for the data then to come to the federal government between the state health departments and the CDC. And in this model, CDC will not get information directly from the hospitals that are involved with the HIEs or the HIE. We will only get data that comes from the state health department or data that the state health department provides permission for the HIE to send to us, if the HIE is the best entity to have the ability to send the data. Am I answering your question now?
I'll ask you later. Basically, what I'm asking is, are you talking to licensed folks? Is it applying?
It's a work in progress. And with H1N1, we are beginning to explore how disparate data sources that will be coming into CDC can be managed. At the moment, what we're doing in this particular project is not a standard for the nation. What we are doing here is examining how this can function, how it can function well, and our desire, of course, as a project, is that others will see what we're doing and will be able to emulate that, and that will become a standard for how we will conduct business in the future with surveillance. But I can't speak for all of CDC, of course. I can't speak for all of NICVI. I can only speak for how we are conducting this particular project, and we want to make as many people as possible aware of how we're doing this project, and we have a biased perspective that this represents a very good way to move our surveillance programs forward into the future. And one of the key messages that we want public health at CDC to understand is the tremendous, robust nature of the data that exists in these health information exchanges that goes well beyond syndromic surveillance. It also gets into greatly enhanced case reporting, the ability to start accessing information that we are only doing in a spotty way to this point, like injury information, or as Jack mentioned, chronic diseases. And so there are a lot of things that can be enhanced at the state and local health department level by having access to these kinds of databases. And what benefits state health departments, in my opinion, also benefits CDC, because what they can gather and what they can have subsequently benefits us as well.
There was one question back here, and then are we done?
In your alerting schema, providers can receive information from multiple entities. How would you reconcile disparate guidance?
That's a bigger question than the technical piece that we're addressing, and that's been an issue for public health for quite a long time. Part of it's going to be making very, very certain that the information that we're including in the bidirectional communication or the EMR alerting is current, and that there is messaging consistency, particularly between the local, state, and the federal agencies.
But that's not going to be a reality.
It's not going to be a reality, but there are ways that we can improve, and I'm thinking back to SARS or peanut butter or any other public health emergency of the last.
But the guidance needs to reflect local environment.
Yes.
And the guidance at the local level really reflects the environment in which the providers are working and the challenges that we're facing.
Well, one thing, and maybe I'm going to answer your question with this, hopefully. If you go back to the diagram, in our schema, federal alerts go to the state health department.
Right.
Each state has its standard operating procedure.
Right.
For example, I saw the latest Han demonstration yesterday,
right.
And some states like California send their information solely to the local health department,
right.
And then the local health department has the jurisdiction. The health information exchanges in our current process, in our current procedure that is in development, are not going to be sending messages willy-nilly. They're going to be getting their instructions and their data from the local health authorities in which they reside. So, if in Jack's situation, where she's in Inland Northwest Health Services, and the Idaho State Health Department, state epidemiologist, or whoever's in charge of HON or the similar process, sends them a message and states, this is information we want you to relay to this population that exists within our state,
mm-hmm.
they would follow those instructions. If Spokane Regional Health District sent them a message and said, this is critical information we believe for our local community, we want this to go to this group of people, then that would be the message they would send.
Mm-hmm.
They would not take something directly from us or from the FDA or whatever and package that and send that without the recognition and approval of the local public health authorities under which they're governed.
And that's the technical side of how we would work to assure that they got the appropriate message. But the reality, as you're well aware, is that in an emergency, messaging comes out from all different directions. And
well, we can't control CNN.
Well, and we can't control the World Health Organization.
Yeah.
I mean, and all if you think back to the H1N1 earlier this year, the different communications that were coming out. So it's the other processes that are put in place, the daily telephone calls, for example, that occur during an emergency between the local health officials and state and so on, the NACHO calls and the ASTO calls and all those other things that go on. All those processes will be absolutely critical to reinforce this. But this isn't going to be, we can't impose a technical solution that's going to fix that problem.
But in your technology, could a local jurisdiction say, in our jurisdiction, this is what the guidance has to be for mm-hmm. our environment, and that we would not have the state guidance may be broader because it's representing disease activity that is not as uniform, or
yes.
there are differences, and that to avoid confusion, because providers cannot read three and four,
mm-hmm.
they're going to read one.
Right.
It depends upon how the state has things organized. In some states,
mm-hmm.
they will send a message out directly to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
In other states, they will send a message strictly to the local health jurisdiction mm-hmm. and have them manage it. And I don't know how every state functions, but the three states that we have here can tell you how they work.
And they're Charlie, this is Jerry from New York. Just a little bit more about what we're doing as part of our project. I think as Jack had mentioned, we're engaging NYSHO, our basically our statewide association of county health officials. We actually have an informatics governance group where we give updates on this project and get feedback. Included in our informatics governance group includes our county health officials and includes our hospitals. So we actually have basically anybody, all of our public health partners are part of the informatics governance process. We've also actually gone out and met with our NYSHO and the entire 57 county health departments, and then also their executive committees. And we've gone out to 8 big local Lakewood chapters. So I think we are looking at as we develop this process, how do we integrate and how do we make sure that we can capture, try to improve that coordinated message and use this as a way to really facilitate getting the appropriate message. So I think we are including that in our whole process of this project.
Mm-hmm.
So you're following the principle, policy precedes technology.
Well, it's policy and practice. So the policy is, the legal structure is, it's the local health agencies that have the authority to manage the public health issues in their jurisdiction. The practice is, it's the local health agency with the relationships and with the existing communication mechanisms, and who end up having to deal with it if there's confusion. So it's absolutely, it has to be driven at the local level. Yeah.
Right. And that's one thing, our technology is supporting those policies in the context, the sense of the alerting people based on the patient data that's presented to the knowledge. So.
Are we okay on time? Oh, we've got 5 minutes. We've almost successfully eaten up Bill Loeber's time. So any other questions for any of the speakers or anything else on this topic? Oh, well, that's a good way to put it into questions, is to ask if there's any more. So, all right, well, thank you very much.